followed, if you will, by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I thought for the reading, I'd like first to read something that I guess many of you have never heard. I'm going to read a partial list of promises. There are more. Read your big book for something different each time. An excellent reading would be to go through it, the first 11 chapters, and read promises and underline them in a different color than you've ever used before. I've done that. Being, for the third step, being all-powerful, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. More and more in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. On the same page, that was page 63 of the big book, a little bit down. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a great one, was felt at once. You almost probably have never heard the third step promises. If you've been around me long enough, you've heard my favorite share aren't the ninth step. My favorite for me are the fifth. Page 75. Once we had taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And the ninth step promises. If we are starting on page 83 and going to 84, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? There's a bunch of drunks writing. We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize. if we work for them. Scripture reading for the 12th step. 12th step is, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Jesus has a very good friend named Lazarus, who has the sisters Martha and Mary, who are also his friends. In a rather long story, Lazarus dies. Jesus goes to visit Martha and Mary to console them. They both testify to their belief in Jesus. And I pick up the story at this point. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Lord, come and see," they said. The Jews began to remark. Oh, Jesus began to weep, which caused some of the Jews to remark, "See how much he loved him." But some said, "He opened the eyes of that blind man. Why could he not have done something to stop this man from dying?" Once again, troubled in spirit, Jesus approached the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across it. "Take away the stone," Jesus directed. Martha, the dead man's sister, said to him, "Lord, it's been 4 days now. Surely there'll be a stench." Jesus replied, "Did I not assure you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God displayed?" Then they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward, and he said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I've said this for the sake of the crowd, that they may believe that you sent me." Having said this, he called loudly, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, bound hand and foot with linen strips, his face wrapped in a cloth. "Untie him," Jesus told them, "and let him go free." That's a neat and a heavy story, because we've lived it our own way. Why did Lazarus die? Jesus knows that he's sick and he waits. Part of it was to show the glory of God. We know death. We know emotional, spiritual death. Some of us have been on the verge of physical death. Some of us may have been pronounced physically dead from the results of alcoholism. We were dead. And you know, it's so neat. Somebody says, "Take away the stone," and they said, "Hey, Lord, he's been dead 4 days. There'll be a stench." That's not exactly been unknown about some of the people that we bring into our program. Maybe not exactly about us. We were so dead. We stunk, I'll tell you. Jesus brings us back to life. Then comes the very heavy part of the story. Lazarus comes out. And the way they used to bind people is take a cloth, little strips, and wrap them all up. And Lazarus is still bound, head and foot. He can just kind of come out like this. Jesus doesn't free him. He turns to the crowd and he says, "Untie him." Jesus brought you back to life. But he didn't teach you how to walk. He brought you to us. And he told us, "Untie her that she may go free." And our love from the day you came in has as its purpose to remove one bandage after another from you until you can walk free. It's an amazing thing how God works. The 12th step is unbinding people that they might walk free. And it's so wonderful. Chad's here. I had the great pleasure, seeing Chad when he came out of the hospital. He couldn't smile for the first month. It was just all tension and misery. And then the first time I saw him smiling, ain't it? It's so amazing. Yeah, just what it did to me. I don't know where he was at that time, but you know, we were in a meeting, something happened, and he laughed. And how great I felt, because he was freer. Chad is a friend, a deep friend. He came down to do the fifth step. And I saw all of his stuff dumped. And I was able to be part of a process untying them. We had shared at meetings I'd helped untie them by sharing my own life. And I watched him walk freer. And then I went up to Enid after Christmas. And I was at a meeting, and I had a wake service and went to a meeting there, and Chad was in, and he said, are you going right back after the meeting? And I thought he had a problem to talk over, and I said, no, but I've a friend of mine in the program was having a birthday, and I was taking him out for dinner. And I said, I got to go out for dinner, but I'm staying in a motel. If you want to drop over, come on over 10:30. 10:30, he comes over, and he's got this package wrapped. Puts it down on the counter, and we're talking. I wonder if he had a problem. He didn't have a problem at all. I keep waiting. Where's the problem? And he was. Everything was going great. And he brought me a Christmas present. I drink 2 to 3 gallons of tea a day. I make sun tea. And Chad had gone out, and he remembered this. And he saw one of these little bowls that says sun tea, and it's a neat thing. It's very attractive. I got a lot of great Christmas presents this year. For the first year, like, I love sweaters and got all neat sweaters. I've told this to other people without hurting their feelings, that iced tea container's the present that I most appreciate. He's a big kind of burly guy, but he's got a heart. And he thought of me, and he thought of me, and he bought a gift. And he wrapped it, and he held it, and he delivered it. And it's precious. And it's what this whole fellowship is. By bringing that present, he's helped me walk freer. By listening to him and sharing with him, I help him walk freer. We're still stumbling. We still don't have our full ability to walk free. And the program is constantly doing this. Chad didn't make me sober, and I didn't make Chad sober. I know that today. Only God gives me the gift of sobriety. But AA and Al-Anon and NA gives us the ability to walk. And it gives us, therefore, our purpose and our intention. I believe very deeply in tape talks. One of the reasons I do this is very recent. Well, I was at a place thing in Norman, and they were offering some of the founders' talks. And I had some money. I really couldn't afford it, and I bought some of them. And I've been listening to them. I haven't listened to them all yet over a two-year period. But as I listen to them, they're exploding a lot of my ideas on AA. And I got finally to hear the life of Dr. Bob. He's only made one talk, and then he's on tape also for his final address, a real brief thing. I think he was already dying of cancer and weak, and he said a few words to AA. That's when he made that reference to, don't make it Freudian. Keep the program. Psychiatry can always help us, but it should never replace us. But in the talk that he gives, he said this thing that I shared with you already, and it was so important to me, how he struggled with alcohol, the need to drink. He struggled with the desire for a drink, a strong desire for a drink, for at least 3 years. And the only thing he would do would be to go find an alcoholic and work with him. And after I heard that, I went through the big book again. And all of a sudden, I was hearing it differently. The big book, like the Bible, can be a lot of things. But if there's a single thing it boils down to, it's the 12th step. And this was the experience of Dr. Bob. It's carrying the message. Where we hear that we are a selfish program, we are and we aren't. Our entire purpose is to become selfless. We must be selfish in the sense that we don't work the program for wife, job, husband, or anybody else. For this reason, sooner or later, being human, they're going to let us down. And if we're working the program for them, when we become mad at them, we've lost our reason to stay sober. We've got to work the program for ourselves. That way, what others do will never affect our working the program, and we'll go right on growing. But our entire purpose is to carry the message to others. Someone made the statement that in the big book we are told it's a selfish program, and I challenged him on it, and he was a regional committeeman and really knew the program, and he went back and he read the whole big book, and he came back later on and he said that he was wrong. Nowhere in the big book does it say it's a selfish program. We exist to serve others. As a matter of fact, Bill Wilson was told to pray never for anything for himself, but only for what other needed. That's in that one of those early chapters. The whole purpose of AA is to carry the message, the 12th step. Well, I hope to share a little bit of that. But Dr. Bob's life made me become aware of this. And I remembered how again and again the big book tells us to go work with another alcoholic as the solution to our problems. The specific thing, because I've walked with this with difficulty and so many others have, the big book talks about how careful we should be in matters of sex. Don't go to others easily for advice. Some people will tell you to do whatever you want. Other people will tell you to live like a monk. either of those advice may not be something you can live and may kill you. Be very careful. Share your life, go to a prudent person, and get good advice. If you use your sex to hurt another person, to bring harm into the life of another person, sooner or later you will get drunk if you stay doing this, because you're obviously, if you're free to hurt others and you're staying in a pattern of hurting others, you're going to kill love in your own heart. And a God of love, therefore, will be driven out, and you won't know his power sooner or later down the line. But the book then says, if you have big sexual hang-ups, and this advice is there, when everything else fails, and you're getting torn apart sexually, go work with another alcoholic. That's your advice. The solution to just about any single program is go work with another alcoholic. It's part of the great solution. And think about it. Why do we exist? Why is there AA? Not because Bill Wilson was so happy he wanted to share what he got, but because in Akron, Bill had learned from previous experience that unless he worked with other drunks, he was going to get drunk again. And he faced his only real temptation to drink. Everything fell apart. And he knew. He saw the bar and it lured him, and he wanted to go in there and get drunk. And he felt the desire coming up. And so he started looking to save himself. And so AA exists because Bill Wilson had to work with another alcoholic in order to stay sober. Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson are very human people. Listening to these founders' talks are so terrific in this. We tend to make them unlike us, different, strange, weird, unreal. Bill Wilson had deep depressions for 20 years after God blinded him in the hospital, for 15 years after he wrote the big book, for 5 years after he wrote the 12 and 12. Deep depressions, and he was receiving psychiatric treatment through this period. He's like you and me. Many of you are better than him. You haven't had depressions for 5 years after you've been in the program, or some of you never go into deep depressions. Our founders were very real. They stayed sober because they worked with other alcoholics. And so our program has as its goal the 12th step. And I've become aware, therefore, that the reason I'm sober is because other people carried the message to keep their own sobriety. And that cautions me. Unless I continue to work with others, my own sobriety is going to be endangered. Unless we give it away, we're going to lose it. And that isn't just in AA, that's in religion. I have a cousin whose wife underwent real traumas. They lost the baby who was about a year and a half old, had two children, then had another child, a fourth child. And when the fourth child was 5 years old, she was killed in a car accident. And my cousin's wife couldn't handle this second death, and she fell apart. I was called down to see her, went down there, and when I got down there, it was in Texas, I thought I'd find a vegetable, and she was beaming and smiling with joy and peace. She had found God through something called, through the church, through religion, the charismatic movement. Today, she's a vegetable again. For a while, she shared what she received, but then she stopped sharing it. And it's that old story. If we're not working, if we're not active, and we're not growing, the demon that's been chased out returns, and the last state is worse than the first. People in religion lose what they don't share. People in AA lose what they don't share. Just look at it. You know, who are the people who make it? Who are the people in your groups with 15 and 20 and 25 years? They're people who keep coming to AA and who keep sharing and who keep working with alcoholics. I don't want to die drunk. I don't believe, and when I talked about emotions being good, actions can be wrong. I believe the healthiest thing for me is to keep one fear. I'm afraid of dying drunk. And I've got to always be afraid of dying drunk, because if I'm not somehow, well, some people have such a deep God experience that he washes this away. I know one person in the program that I believe on this. He had a fear of dying drunk for a long time. That's gone today because God is so powerful in his life, as long as he knows he keeps God in one day at a time. I'm not nearly there. And so I go to AA because I don't want to die drunk. And I've seen people die drunk who stop going to AA. And this keeps plugging me into God. But there are good side benefits. I know a lot of alcoholics that God has touched, and they're living at home. I feel sorry for them. I can look over, and I can know that I helped Chad. I hope Chad knows that he's helped me. I have countless friends. I wanted to die this fall. I still do. I have this. This was not a sick death. It has a bad premise, but it's a good death. If I were to die right now, I honestly don't know if there's a church in Oklahoma City big enough to hold my friends. And the sick part of me feels, and if I stay around, I'll screw it up. And there are people that I've helped. I know there are countless eyes smiling because I helped unwrap the bandages. You know, there are countless hearts that are happier because I was there. How heavy that makes a life. Yeah, a lot of people you work with die and get drunk, but they've had periods of sobriety, a lot of them. Don't forget that. For a period of time, there was peace in their life. You helped do that. You were God's instrument. How neat that is. You know, when you start counting back, 1 year, I've tried to share the countless number of people brand new in the program who have said something that have opened up my vision. Just while we've been here, if you had an excellent memory, and I don't, and you just have been able to write them all down, the number of things I said newcomers have blurted out at a meeting. The most recent was when that newcomer said, "Wonder where I'd be tonight." And he helped me work the first step 2 weeks ago when I really needed it. I started wondering where I'd be. And then God sent a priest into my life that day drunk to show me where I'd be. Somebody says the prayer of the seventh step, 1 month sober. And he changed the seventh step for me, 5 years sober. Because I realized that what defects are, what stands in the way of my usefulness to you. Everybody can help everybody. If I'm hurting, if I'm near dying, and I go to AA and nobody shows up, I'm probably going to get drunk. And if you've got a day sober and you're there, you're providing me with the fellowship and you're keeping me sober. This has never happened to me, but it has happened to a friend of mine. We started a third meeting in Alva. And unfortunately, the people there weren't supporting the meeting. And this guy, after I left, went to the meeting on a Monday night, waited 20 minutes, nobody came, and he went out to a bar and he got drunk. Your being there has contributed to my sobriety and my serenity and my sanity. And so we help each other. And your life has purpose. How many people save lives? Doctors save physical lives. But you know how many suicides, when they wake up in the hospital, curse their doctor. We really don't save physical lives. We try. That's our start. But we bring people peace. And how awesome that is. We bring people to a point where most of them are happy that we've walked into their lives. What a great purpose. Just count back. You know, you want to know what you're living for. One of the heaviest stories I've ever heard was a guy checked into a flop house to drink himself to death. Knew he was alcoholic and there was no hope. And he tried for a whole month, but he couldn't work because he'd pass out before he'd have enough alcohol in his system to die. And while he was unconscious, his system would burn out most of the alcohol. And when he'd get up, he'd start drinking again. And it was his sole purpose to commit suicide by drinking himself to death. After a month, in total despair and disgust, he had to leave. It wasn't working. And there was nothing. Shortly after that, he found AA. And he's sober. The last time I heard him, he had 5 years of awesome sobriety. One of the things that helped him is, at the same time, someone else checked into the same flop house with the same purpose and succeeded. We asked why. Why, we don't know. Why me and not the other priests? I don't know why me, but I know for what. And the for what is the 12th step. I've got a purpose. I know that. I don't know why God picked me, but I do know for what he picked me. And it's to witness. It's to witness to what I am and to what he's doing in my life. And that's what the 12th step is. It's witnessing. Every single one of us, if you're sober today, you're a miracle. And you have a reason then to live and something to carry. Having had a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, I hope And I know that several of you have, I hope all of you have had spiritual experiences this weekend, that you felt the love of God in deep ways. That's sort of a mountaintop experience. They don't last. They don't stay. There's a time in the Gospels where Jesus takes three of his buddies up on a mountaintop and he shows them their glory. But they've got to come back down. And when they're coming back down the mountain, he reminds them that he's going to have to suffer and die. And that's to tell them that they're probably going to have to suffer and die too. That there'll be some pain, dying to self, being willing to parade their worst, die to what they'd like to hide, and put themselves, offer themselves to the world. They've had their experience on the mountain because they've got to live in the valley. And it's so dark sometimes in the valley and so lonely. We have our experiences because we need them. I've had many spiritual experiences, deep things, since I've been in AA. They don't stay. They can't. But a spiritual awakening is supposed to stay. I'm one of these weirdos. There's others here. Within 2 minutes after hitting the floor, I'm a ball of energy. But I know that that is not the way most other people are. Most other people slowly come awake. That's what the word awakening is. It's not an instant thing, and it's not a 100% thing. We slowly become awake to a new power that stays in us as long as we don't do something to lose it, as long as we continue to do the things that keep it. For years now, I have been aware of a power inside me, a power of love, that I am loved, and therefore that I have love to give. I've been awake to that even when I've been in deep depressions, when I've been driven by blind panic. I've lost it only 5 days in 7.5 years now. They've been at the tail end of long, dry drunks. That's, to me, what a spiritual awakening is. We gradually become conscious that there is something new in us. And I'm sure other people are aware of it long before we are. Because we always are living with ourselves now, where they have clearer memories of what we looked like yesterday compared to what we look like today. All you know is what you're feeling today. And sometimes you have to pause and try to re-remember what it was like. A woman in Enid, who was one of the screwiest dames I've ever met, came into the program, and after a while she had a lot of peace going for her. And Lear, hearing her again and again and again share how she felt exactly the same, like there was no progress in her life, when all of us could see miles of progress, made me aware that, hey, when I feel the same thing, there probably is progress going on in my life. This is one of the reasons we need a sponsor often, for him to tell us that we're growing, to help us see. There are times, my sponsor has a twin phrase, you disturb the comforted and you comfort the disturbed. And he does that. And there are times in sponsoring when people really feel that they're nowhere, to remind them of where they were when they came in. Sometimes it's embarrassing to be reminded of how we couldn't smile for a long time. Certainly I don't have a right to share where Chad was at publicly, and I give him amends for that because I didn't ask him before I did it. But it's good for us privately to be told this periodically in a nice, loving way, not in a put-down way. Hey, remember where you were at when you came. Because we do forget to see how much growth there has been. And when we look back on that, we are spiritually awake. I'm one of these, the compulsion was removed about 2.5 weeks after I came into the program. You will hear people say that their worst day sober is better than their best day drunk. Please don't ever say that. Because it isn't true for a lot of alcoholics. My worst days were my first 2 weeks in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had the disease of alcoholism and no answer at all. I didn't have alcohol to drug me at all, and I didn't have pills to drug me at all. I had just the promise. And I was in hell. I'd been in hell a long time before, but at least alcohol occasionally would help me forget how painful it was. When I came into the program, I've known the worst days of my life. I know other people. I know someone who 7 years sober blew his head off. His worst day sober was worse than his worst day drunk. And if we say the wrong things, if we universalize, and if we pass proverbs that we've heard, sometimes we can hurt people. Alcoholism is the disease, and alcohol for a long time is the answer until it becomes part of the problem also. When we take away the alcohol, we have just the problem, and that's bad. And we do hurt, many of us, when we come into the program. And a lot of people like Dr. Bob continue to hurt for a long time. The only thing we know is one thing will be worse if we go back to drinking, because the disease is progressing and the alcohol will bring more pain into our lives. But we continue to walk through with the pain. Anyway, because I was in such a tremendous hell, I had a profound God experience, woke up one day, was at peace with myself. The compulsion has left. It came back only once. I had to call my sponsor to keep from taking a drink. The desire has come back several times. It will come back from movies, television. I'll see someone taking a drink. It can come back just at weird moments. I twice decided to get drunk at the Bishop. The reason I didn't, I believe, is because I was making my program and attending meetings regularly, and God sent a stupid thought into my head, which was what I needed at that time. I wasn't able to think of what would happen. The reason I didn't get drunk at the Bishop was it then occurred to me that if I got drunk, he'd be convinced I was as stupid as he thought that I was. And I refused to give him that satisfaction, so I stayed sober. That was the thought. That was the only thought at that moment that would have thrown it out, so I stopped thinking about the booze. So God has removed the compulsion, and I'm aware that there's so many new things going on in my life. I like being Larry. I can hug me. This is a tremendous thing. It took 2 years for me to do this, to feel good enough about myself. When I came into the program, I did not want my mother, and I mean this, to touch me. I didn't want anyone to touch me. I had to learn how to hug men. I had to learn how to hug women. And I couldn't think of hugging myself. A nun told me this, taught me this technique. And it took a year before I could do it and mean it. I'd shudder when I put my arms around myself because I was garbage. I still occasionally feel that, but, you know, I'm proud right now. This is a love gift from God. I'm a masterpiece. And that's a spiritual awakening. All these things are so different that they tell me something new's happening. I don't care what it is. I just want to know that it is. I can't understand it. If I could understand it, it'd be my size, so I'm not that concerned about it. Having had a spiritual awakening, so we're spiritually awake if we're here, as the result. Please note that a lot of AA groups have had people do their steps, and this is the place, more often than not, there's been an error. I think I've been in at least 5 AA places where on their steps they have having had a spiritual awakening as a result. That isn't there. It's the result. That's fascinating. You know, you gals, I don't know, I've done it once or twice as an experiment. It's not my bag at all. If you take flour and you take whatever, you take water and you take milk and you take eggs and you dump it all in according to a recipe and you take chocolate and you get a chocolate cake, you don't go, ooh, look. You put the recipe in, you get a chocolate cake, that's what's supposed to happen. If you put it all together and open in the oven and out comes the pumpkin pie, you're going to wonder, what's happening? That's what we're told. You put 11 ingredients in, and what are you supposed to come out with? A spiritual awakening. That's the result of these steps. And that's kind of a deep thing. I don't think too easily with brand new people we ought to point out the 12th step. Because the last thing that a drunk in from the gutter wants is to be told, hey, you work all this, you're going to have a spiritual awakening. He doesn't want that. He wants a material awakening, get the creditors off his back, or to get two shoes that match, or socks to go with them, or pants that zip, something like that, you know. And they don't have that embarrassing stain going down the front. So he doesn't want a spiritual awakening, but after we're in a while and things start getting good, then it's time to start telling people what it's all about. The whole result, the whole purpose of these steps, they have one goal. Put them all together, what's supposed to come out of the oven of AA? You are supposed to be spiritually awake. It's got to happen. I have never met anybody who has denied the promise. Our program builds the promise in. It's just, it starts off. The promise is a participial phrase. It's so obvious and evident that it starts off having had. It's past tense. You have had it. You know this. By the time you're at 12, you'll know that it's there so much that you know we start having. You've had your spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Now we can go on from here. So that's what AA is really all about if people are going to take the program. That was in that nine-step promises that I said. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They will always materialize if we work for them. That's so neat. AA isn't an iffy thing. It's a guaranteed thing. I've never met anybody who really working 1 to 11, as the book says, got to 12 and said it ain't true. I just never have. It can be. I just never. I mean, I've known people who rekindled the steps. Oh, yeah, I did 4 my way. I did 5 my way. I didn't have to do a 4th one. You know, I'd gone to confession before. I didn't have to tell somebody. I told God. You know, they revised the whole thing. I didn't have to make amends. My living sober is making amends, and I'd only hurt my family. Now, why didn't I get my spiritual awakening? Well, no, if you substitute lard for, if you substitute dirt for flour in the recipe, and you substitute, you know, you go milk for eggs, and you substitute strawberries for chocolate, and you don't get a chocolate cake, don't be surprised. You know, if you mess with the ingredients, you don't get the recipe. You can try to experiment to make it better. We can always add things to deepen. I've got lots of things I add to our program, lots of little techniques that were passed on to me. I usually don't share them from the podium because they're not guaranteed. They don't replace the steps. Occasionally I will. I'll offer them, and I'll always say this is something I add that's worked for me just in case other people want to try it, and maybe it can help some of them. But the 12 steps, I tell people, should work. Notice, some, you know, we do hear some bad things. We do not have suggested steps. My sponsor just pointed this out to me. We have a suggested program. We suggest the program. Here's the recipe, but we don't say, you want a chocolate cake? Here's suggested ingredients. No, no. We suggest a recipe. Do you want a chocolate cake? Do you want a spiritual awakening? We'll suggest this program. The program has 12 ingredients. There's a big difference in that. And if we kind of sharpen our vocabulary to match the big book, we'll save a lot of people. Because a lot of people think we have suggested steps. No, no. We have a suggested program. You don't have to work it. You can come to AA. But if you want to be at the 12th step, then you work what's going to happen. We tried to practice these. Well, we tried. Notice these words. We tried to practice. How more iffy can you get? For those of us who are perfectionists, you don't have to succeed at anything in AA. You just have to try. You have to practice. It's almost like we're not in the real game yet. We're still practicing out in the field because the game's going to start in a while. Just keep working away. We tried to carry the message and to practice these principles. We try to carry this message to alcoholics. And then we're told in our literature what carrying the message is. Let's look at that. What is the message? Me. I want to emphasize that. I am the message. You are the message. Not what we say, but what we are. Now, sometimes we've got to say things so others can hear the message that we are. You know, you see me sober. So what? If I tell you I'm an alcoholic and you hear how drunk I've been, you see me straight. If I tell you what pills did for me and you know that I haven't had a mood-changing pill in 7.5 years, and then you look deep in my eyes and you see I've got eye contact and you know something's happening. That's the message. You're the message. Very, very definitely. That's why we tell what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. That's why we share our experience, strength, and hope, so others can know us, so that they can somehow touch us. It is so neat. I've used the phrase already. Christians are told how important it is to die to self so that they can live with Christ, to his love. I see very few Christians who have the freedom to do this. Almost all alcoholics do it, which is why alcoholics are instruments for healing. What is dying to self? It's putting aside your shame and bringing out your past and telling others about it. Yeah, I stole from the church. I hurt my mother. I walked all over everybody. I became a priest for selfish reasons. I preached myself. I was involved in the anti-war movement to try to escape my own emptiness. I can share all that. Normal people don't do things like this. We die to self. We share ourselves. And so we can live to Christ, so love can be alive in us. And that's how it happens, and that's why it works. I'm sober. I have a certain amount of peace. And I can share in so many other ways. See, a lot of us think it's pride. It's okay to say we're sober, but it's pride to go into some of our other defects that are being handled today. It isn't. You've got to share so many of the areas where your successes are. I've got to tell you how I stopped smoking sooner or later, so you'll see another example of God's power. I owe it to you to tell you that I haven't had a snack in 4 years now. And I'm a compulsive overeater, and I don't crave food. I can walk into your home, you can have chips out, pretzels out, and everything else. I don't want them. I don't fight food. God fights the battle for me. I got to tell you that I've never had a fight in my life because I'm a courage. I don't see any sense in being hurt. Once they take the pain out of hurt, they can give me all they want. But as long as there's pain in hurt, I don't want any. And I don't see any sense in having a fight because somebody's likely to hit me. And that hurts, and I don't want pain. So I've never had a fight in my life outside my family. I've only backed down from two. But I stood up to people. In an AA meeting, some drunk was putting the make on a gal. And I told him to move. He was drunk at the time. And he was a tremendously belligerent drunk, and I put him in his place. I was scared, but I had the power to do what needed to be done. And I've got to share things like that with you, because if we only share our failures, we're not going anywhere. Jack B. went to an AA meeting. He's a guy who's helped me a lot. He's, in his talks, a circuit speaker. Went to an AA meeting early in his drink, and I never went back till he really hit a tremendous bottom. Because he went to this meeting, and they were just telling what it was like. And he said he knew how to get drunk. He didn't have to go to AA to learn how to get drunk. He wanted to go to learn how to stay sober. So we got to say what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. We got to share some of the successes so people know that you don't just have to live with cowardice, that when somebody needs to be put in their place, God will give you the strength to put them in their place, and you won't worry about the consequences. And in fifth steps, I've nailed huge giants to the wall to tell them what they didn't want to hear because they needed to hear it to save their life. And that's neat to hear when you know that I'm a coward, that God will give me the strength that I need to share. And the message is all of it we do, every single thing. Carrying the message isn't just working with drunks. The statement does not say those steps are so perfect. We carry the message to drinking alcoholics. We carry the message to alcoholics. Wherever there's an alcoholic, I'm supposed to carry the message. And I can help you in many ways. I can show love. I can show love by straightening seats, by cleaning ashtrays. I can show love by washing dishes. That's important. If you've got some time in the program, do a little bit of cleaning up to remind yourself that we're all equal, but don't do most of it. Because that's the only thing newcomers can do to feel their dignity. And encourage them to work with you. Allow them to see that they have a place in the fellowship. The group I entered broke most of the traditions. I will not allow easily a tradition to be broken at all, because almost every group I've been in has broken traditions, and I've seen the pain. The group I was in, we were rich. And I remember being in an AA meeting, and I drank pop, and I had my bottles always with me, and picking them up to carry to put away, and picking up an ashtray, and somebody said, "Don't do that. We pay somebody to do it." And how hurt that I was for that. A new guy could do nothing in our group. He could do nothing but just sit there. He couldn't feel like he was helping at all. If you just let your new people work with them, but don't do it all, let them do it, but be with them so they don't feel that they're just janitors. You work so they see that it's something everybody does, but give the greatest part to them and encourage them so they can feel useful. 12-stepping, sharing at meetings, however we can. Not everybody can talk from behind a podium. Not everybody does. I'll cream somebody who tries to pressure a person to talk at a meeting. That may not be their bag. That may not be their way to 12-step. I know people who are lousy. A guy in Lawton, he's dead now, died sober. He was horrible from the podium. All he did was give you a record of his jobs and how he got fired and moved from town to town. One-on-one, he was fabulous. Get him alone, man, he was the greatest person I know. They should never have invited him behind a podium. He just couldn't do it there. You know, we all have different talents, different ways to share. I'm lousy calling on drinking drunks. Because I'm a priest, and sooner or later they ask what I do. Every drunk I've ever called on asks that. They hear I'm a priest, and I see them immediately turning AA off, and they say, no wonder it worked for you. You've got an in with God. People come for the fifth step, and they start doing screwy things, and I've usually outdone most of them. And they figure, well, if a priest could be that cruddy and God could still love him, well, I don't got it that bad. Only one person whose life I've ever heard has been as emotionally screwed up as I've been. Said that once, and everybody thought I was talking, who did a fifth step with me, thought I was talking about them. There are some people here who came to me for the fifth step. The person I'm talking to is in another state. He's a very good friend, and he knows he's as screwed up as I am. So he clearly knows that the reference would be to him. So I can do well there. We have different talents. Use them and watch them. And I won't allow somebody I sponsor to be pressured by someone else. I tell them to say, if anybody pressures them, my sponsor told me not to talk. Use them and watch them. And I won't allow somebody I sponsor to be pressured by someone else. I tell them to say, if anybody pressures them, my sponsor told me not to talk. And then if anybody gives them war, they're at war with me. And that can be something. Alcoholics who suffer, they're here. Alcoholics are suffering all over the place. Every group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to alcoholics that still suffer, not that still drink. And there's lots of heartbreak in AA. And so we've got to carry our message inside as well as outside. In the Gospels, Jesus calls four people. He calls Peter and his brother Andrew, and they're fishing. And he says, come on, I'll make you fishers of men. And then he calls James and his brother John, and they're putting the nets in order. And the net is what's going to be used to do the fishing. And that's a neat parallel. It reminds us that we have a double mission, outward, to carry the message outward, but we've always also got to be putting the net in order, and we're the net. There's so many rips and there's so many holes. And we've got to do our 12-stepping inside our organization also. I've seen people with pain all over their face at an AA meeting ignored. I did it once. And boy, I still carry the guilt for that day. The guy is sober, but I still feel guilty that he could have got drunk because nobody, including me, walked up and said, hey, you want to say anything? That's all. You don't have to tell them they look bad. They know it. You know, just start sharing with them, open the door in case they want to share. And I didn't do that, and I should have. Other times I have. I've gone up to people who are hurting, and I said, I can help you I want to be your sponsor. I didn't like them at all. I don't have to like people. My feelings are my own. I've shared that. There was a guy who had never been taught a basic part of neatness. Saliva would drip from his mouth when he talked, and he wouldn't do anything about it. He never washed. He stunk. And I'm as prissy as they come. And the guy was dying, and I walked up to him and he said, I told him, I can save your life if you'll let me. If you do what I tell you. For a year and a half, he followed my instructions and he didn't drink. Then he felt he was healthy. He went off and took his life in his own hands. He's gone back to drinking. I didn't like him almost the whole time I sponsored him. I don't have to like him. I got to love him. I've got to help him. I've got to take the activity. He was sober when I went up to him. You will hear people say there's no such thing as a bad 12-step call. That's another one of the things I 100% disagree with. Most 12-stepping, I believe, is poor. Not that people, you know, what they'll say is, you didn't get drunk, so it wasn't a failure. Oh, no. What do I owe you? I owe you my message. What is my message? What it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. That's what our literature says. Not what are most 12 steps? We say what it was like, what happened, and what it was like at the best moment since. Most people don't share where they're at. And this caused me deep trouble. Most people don't get behind a podium and say they're uptight. I don't have all my peace. I just had a little friction trying to get everything together today. And it takes me a while to calm down. Things like that can happen. That's where I'm at. I owe you that. Most people don't want to share that. I've had to tell groups when it seems like any time I get asked to give an AA talk, I'm depressed. And I've got to get up behind the podium and tell them I'm on a downer. I haven't always done it. If I haven't mentioned it, I stay depressed. If I mention it, I almost always walk away feeling better. I shared where I was at. People didn't do that in my group, and I honestly thought that once you came into AA, you stopped farting.
And I was in about, you know, I was in a period of time and I went into a deep depression. And I drove 150 miles to Dallas to find out what was wrong with me because I was depressed and the only one in my whole group that was depressed. And they played me a Clancy tape. Boy, did I know I wasn't the only one depressed. And it saved my life. I got to tell you when I'm depressed. I've had a lot of people walk up and say, you shouldn't share things like that. I had a doctor do that. I had a whole dry, drunk month of November and just kept sharing how much I was hurting. And this doctor came up and he said, you shouldn't say things like that. He's drunk today and I'm sober. He didn't share where he was at. I did. I owe you me. And that's kind of neat because if I have good times and bad times and I share my bad times with you and you see me later and I'm smiling, and then you get into a depression, you know there's help. If you hear that I can be tremendously uptight, if you hear that I can walk out in a fury because the housekeeper didn't put the seventh of seven items on the table, or I could be that inconsiderate and selfish and petty, and then come back and spend a whole day working with an alcoholic. If you find selfish traits in your life, you know it's okay. You can work through those. That's what I owe. It dawned on me that if I'm talking to you and God wants you to experience bubbles, he's going to put bubbles inside me. And if God wants you, for some reason, to experience me depressed, that's what I'm going to be. And if I decide that you're going to be hurt by my sharing where I'm at, then I'm cheating you of the person God felt you were supposed to see today. And I'm showing you an unreal person, and I don't have the total honesty that the program says. And I really believe from listening that most people do not share often where they're at, especially when they're down. You'll see people with a plastic smile on their face, and they're dying, and they say it's all okay. One of the things that helped me do this was when I got to Enid, a gal with 6 years got drunk before her seventh birthday, and she called me the day she got drunk, and she told me that her whole sixth year was a dry drunk, and she put a smile on her face. And the tension between her insides and her outsides got so bad, she couldn't handle it anymore. During my sixth year, during Thanksgiving week, I was back in that same group on the worst dry drunk I had ever been on in AA, and I was hurting. And I didn't want to tell everybody because there were so many newcomers there, they wouldn't be able to handle it. I remembered her, and I still couldn't share. Thanksgiving Day, I went back to that group, and with a lot of curses, I told them that I didn't want to come to this meeting because I knew they were going to talk about gratitude. And the only thing that could be worse is that I could be drunk. And I believe sharing that day started turning it around. I got it out of my system, and I don't care if I've helped people. I offered them myself on the message, what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. That's very important for me. Practice these principles in all our affairs. Note, we're not invited to practice these steps. You can't write an inventory every day at work of your whole life. You can't admit to God, to self, and to another human being when you're out socializing the exact nature of your wrongs. You're told to practice these principles, and if you want a good exercise, you got people who really take the program serious. Get about four or five of you together and say, let's spend all the week with each of us thinking about each step and coming up with what we think the principle of that step is. Then let's get together and one by one share step by step what we think the principles are. My interpretations keep differing. I'm going to give you what I feel today the principle behind each step is. This is very different from when it was the last time I did this. What's the principle of the first step? It's sort of like quitting. It's surrendering. I ain't got it. Give up. It's all over. To me, I've got to renew that today. I've got to see I can't fight alcohol and I can't fight life. Just relax inside. What's the principle of the second step? What should I be doing today? Trust, that absolute confidence. The first leads to despair. The second brings the light in. Hey, I'm not going to worry. Trusting insanity, remember, more than sobriety. It's all going to happen. Patience. I don't know when, but it's all going to happen. I am going to be perfect. Absolutely perfect. So surrender and then trust. Then the third step for me is accepting. The chief word in the third step is, turn our will and our lives over the care of God. It's all out there. That light wants to shine. That warmth. Y'all want to love me. And I'm just going to accept your care. I'm going to put myself in your hands. You know, the Allstate commercial? AA's like that. And third step, I just surrender. I give myself to you. And it's just kind of like letting go, letting you have me. And God, who works through me behind you. The fourth step for me is honesty. I'm going to look at myself. I'm going to say what I am. The fifth step is openness. I'm not going to hide myself in behind locked doors, pulled screens, under a cover in a fetal position. I'm going to tell you some of the stuff I've done. I'm going to be me. I'm going to be willing to stand as fully as I can as the full person that I am. And if I'm depressed, not try to put a smile on my face. If I'm feeling good, not trying to feel down. I'm going to be me, and I'm going to share where I'm at. So it's an openness. The sixth step is a little bit rough to put in words. It's allowing myself, all of me, to be loved. Came entirely ready to have God remove these defects, and that means letting myself be loved. So it's trying to break open so that I'll let God love the unlovable. So it's preparing myself to be loved. The seventh is asking for this love. It's taking the initiative. It's not just passively preparing. It's actively asking, hey, love me. Love me through to perfection. So I'm even taking the initiative to be loved. The eighth step is being aware today that you have feelings, that you're a person. Being aware that you're a person. The ninth step is relating to you as a person. That's the whole purpose of making amends. So I remove my obstacles and just come to you as a person and say hi. You know, you're there, you. The tenth step, it's constantly staying vigilant so that all these things will be happening in my life. The 11th step, prayer, is relating with God. Hearing him love me and saying, yes, you can love me. It's entering this conversation, this life dialogue, this relating with God. And the 12th step is sharing God as he's in me. Now that's today's walkthrough. I did this morning, not even when I did the outline for the talk. I imagine a month from now, I hope some of my interpretations will be different as I keep growing in understanding. It will make for an interesting set of meetings for people who want to take the program differently. Sit down, think, work through, walk, talk, and come up with these, because your understanding of the principles will change mine. People have done it so very, very often and help us all grow. It all, you know, it's just all so neat. It's all designed for me to know that there's God, and for me to know that God is for you. For me to know that, you know, you might be kind of still in your grave coming out. You might not know you're alive, but you're all there. And there's a God of love calling out. And I've got the real neat possibility of taking off one more strip from you. You've got the possibility today of removing one more strip from me to helping us all walk free. Thank you.